first one, in this coming week's Sedra. The Torah in this week's Sedra starts with the mitzvah of Shabbos. And it refers to Shabbos in the masculine. Kol ha'oseh bo melacha mos yumas. Last week's Sedra in Kisisa, the Torah also spoke about Shabbos, and it referred to Shabbos as the feminine. Mechalaleha mos yumas, kol ha'oseh bo melacha. And Shabbos is one of those words that dikduk-wise can sometimes be masculine and sometimes be feminine. But you have to understand why the Torah doesn't arbitrarily sometimes refer it like this and sometimes like that. There must be a reason. So what is the idea of Shabbos being feminine and Shabbos being masculine? And we reflect it in our davening. In most Sidurim, right, on Friday night we say V'yanuchu va Yisrael, which is feminine, refer to the Shabbos as feminine. In the morning and in Musaf we say V'yanuchu vo, masculine. And Mincha time we say V'yanuchu vam and put them together. So what is the idea of putting it together? And Maariv time, light night of Shabbos is feminine, the daytime of Shabbos is masculine. There are many ways of understanding this. I'm going to tell you the way that I understand it. It says that there are two aspects of Shabbos, Zachar v'Shamar. And it seems from a Medrash that they're not just complementary and supplementary, but they're contradictory. In other words, Zachar usually applies to the positive aspects of Shabbos, Kiddush, and enjoying the Shabbos. Shabbos meals are all part of Zachar as Yom HaShabbos. Shomer as Yom HaShabbos is usually related to the more negative parts of Shabbos, not doing malacha and so on. So on the surface, it doesn't seem to be a contradiction between Zachar v'Shomer, because they complement each other, supplement each other. The Shabbos has two aspects to it, a positive aspect of remembering it and enjoying it, and a negative aspect of not doing malacha. They don't seem to at all to be contradictory. But the Medrash seems to say that they are contradictory, and the fact that Shomer v'Zachar v'Dibur Echad, they were said in one utterance, means that even though they seem to be contradictory, they have the same source. So we've explained in the past, where is the Zachar v'Shomer contradictory, in what the purpose and lesson of Shabbos is. On the one hand, Shabbos is supposed to teach me, it's supposed to be a testimony that I make by not doing malacha, that God created the world. And the basic idea is that a person can get in to a mode of working in 6 days in this world, and we have a tremendous amount of power over the world, and we can control the world to a certain degree, and we can change, destroy, create. People begin to think that there's nothing they can't do, that they are omnipotent and all-powerful in this world. I once saw a quote from a doctor. This was about 40 years ago. It sounds so old, 40 years ago. In any case, about 40 years ago. This is before the AIDS epidemic became known. A doctor in Miami said the following. He said, given enough time and enough money, with the emphasis on the money, there is no disease that modern science can't conquer. That was a pompous idea. They didn't even know about some diseases that they still can't conquer.
That's the National Institute of Health. That justifies the National Institute.
Right, right, yeah, yeah. So that's what he's looking for. Right? Give me enough money and I'll cure anything. So people begin to think that they control the world and that they can do anything. So once a week, the Rabban Shalom says the world's off limits. You can't create. And that is the greatest testimony, by not using the world, that the world doesn't belong to us, that it's God's world, and we have to function within the framework that He gave us. We didn't create the world. We didn't design the world, and therefore we are bound to the designer of the one who designed it. And He can tell us what to do and what not to do, not because He's stronger than us, or because He could zap us with a lightning bolt, because He designed the world. Just like the Toyota company can tell me what kind of gas to put in my gas tank and what kind of oil to put in the crankcase and what kind of detergent to use on the upholstery, because they made it. They designed it. They know what they designed it to work on. So I could put sugar in the gas tank if I want. I could put water there too. It's not going to go anywhere because it wasn't designed to go on water or sugar. It was designed to go on a certain grade of gasoline. So I am bound, if I believe that God designed the world, then I am bound to His design. And He can tell me what to eat and what not to eat, what He designed me to eat, to wear, to think, to speak, and so on. And I have free choice to do the opposite, but I may be burning out my motor. I may not be able to go anywhere in the end. So that is one lesson of Shabbos. Very negative lesson. You are not the boss over here. You are a created being, and therefore you are bound to the design and dictates of the Creator. That's what you make a statement when you don't answer the phone on Shabbos. Right? It takes a lot of willpower, and it takes a certain amount of belief that I don't own that phone. Right? Neither does Bezek or AT&T or whatever other, Orange or whatever. But the Rabban Shalom owns that phone. And if he says it's off limits on Shabbos, it's off limits on Shabbos. On the other hand, Shabbos has another lesson. Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. It is a hint to the world to come. And in that respect, Shabbos teaches me that if you work 6 days properly, then the seventh day is Shabbos, just like in this world, if you put in the right effort, you will get the world to come. The Shabbos tells us that we create the world to come, because the world to come doesn't come by itself. It comes through the efforts of human beings. What we do creates our world to come. Every person creates his own world to come through his mitzvahs, through his good deeds and tzedakah and Torah in this world. So on that respect, we are the ones who are partners with God in creation. He gave us an unfinished world, a world that needs to be perfected, and we have to perfect the world and perfect ourselves, and in that way create eternity. So we're pretty important. We're partners with God. So on the surface, those two things seem to be contradictory. Because on the one hand, we're being told that don't think you're the boss, you're just a plain ordinary worker here. On the other hand, we're being told that we're partners with God in creation. Right? And Shabbos, the enjoyment part of Shabbos, and the remembering of Shabbos during the week, to remember that we're building up towards the world to come, that positive side of Shabbos is this lesson. And the enjoyment part of Shabbos is to get a glimpse of the world to come. The whole purpose of the world to come is that we should enjoy that relationship with God. So Shabbos, you're supposed to enjoy the spiritual aspects of Shabbos by eating and drinking and feeling the joy and the pleasure of being involved in a day that's the Shom Yisrael, that's extra spiritual. And that's a hint, an echo of the world to come. We're learning it tonight in Matityo, just saw it now in preparation, that he says that a person should stay away, or refrain. From the pleasures of this world normally, but not on Shabbos and Yontif. Because Shabbos and Yontif, the pleasure themselves is a mitzvah in order to have an echo of the world to come. So on the surface, it seems that these are contradictory. On the one hand, we're being told that we're partners with God in creation. On the other hand, we're being told that we're nobody. We're just a plain, ordinary worker here. And the answer is, they're not contradictory at all. But if you think you're the boss, then you're nobody. But if you understand that you are a created being, created by the boss and designed by the boss, then in that creator's plan, you are his partner. He made you his partner. He wants you to perfect the world, perfect yourself, and create the world to come. So male and female have nothing to do, but are not specific to men and women. It's a concept. Male and female is a universal. It spans the physical, the spiritual, all of nature. There's male and female, meaning the following, that in electricity, there's the male plugs and there's the female plugs. And in plumbing, there's the male and the female. Right? It obviously has connection to the role of men and women, right, even sexual roles. But it's basically that wherever there is something that is the giver, that is the influencer, is the male. And the one being influenced, receiving, is the female. That doesn't mean that all women are receivers and all men are givers, right? It has nothing to do with that. Because women can have male aspects about them and men can have female aspects. We're not talking about people who are not normal. We're talking about in normal situations. We're talking about a concept. There's a concept of male and a concept of female. Shabbos is the male when it gives over influence to us. And Shabbos is the female when it receives influence from us. Of these two lessons, the lesson that Shabbos teaches, that I am not the boss here, that I am only a created being, I testify to the fact that God created this world, right? And He is the one who calls the shots. That's only significant if I keep the Shabbos. Because if I ignore the Shabbos, then I'm not making any statement. The Shabbos itself doesn't make any statement. It's my observance of the Shabbos that makes that statement. Right? Just the fact that Shabbos comes doesn't make any statement. It's the fact that I observe it and refrain from doing malacha, from being creative, that that I am making a statement that I believe that God can tell me what to do in this world because it's His world. So in that respect, I make the Shabbos. It's my observance that makes the Shabbos significant. And that's what it says. The Shomru v'nei Yisrael says Shabbos. The Shomar part of Shabbos. The negative side. The observing, not doing malacha, is la'asos ha'Shabbos. We make the Shabbos. La'asos ha'Shabbos. So in that respect, the Shabbos receives from me, the Shabbos is feminine. And I'm the masculine. But in the aspect that Shabbos is a echo of the world to come, and it reminds me of the spiritual goal that human beings help to create, that the Shabbos itself represents that. Even if I ignore the Shabbos completely, Shabbos is still day, it's still a spiritual day, whether I accept it or not. That's the essence of what Shabbos is. It's an echo of the world to come. So in that respect, Shabbos gives to me. It makes me important. So I'm the female and Shabbos is the male. And therefore, that's the idea of male and female by Shabbos. Now in the Torah it says, Zochar es Yom HaShabbos in Parshas Yisro, and Shomer es HaShabbos in Parshas Veschanan. And even though they were said together, but since we can't hear something together, so the Torah put one of them in the first Aseres HaDibros, and in the review of the Aseres HaDibros it put the second one. Okay. So, but in the Torah, Zohar comes before Shomer. Okay. That's the case. Why, when Rav Shlomo Alkavitz wrote L'chadodi, did he put the opposite order? And we start Shomer v'Zohar b'dibur echad. Not Zohar v'Shomer. So you'll say, because he wanted to put his name in these stanzas, in the head of the stanzas, and Shlomo starts with a shin. So if you put it with Zohar v'Shomer, it would have been Shlomo and not Shlomo. So it wouldn't have worked out. That can't be. For a few reasons. First of all, the Medrash says Shomer v'Zohar. So a question on the Medrash. Not only on the... Secondly, I'm not a poet, but I could find a way of accomplishing both. Of keeping the Zohar v'Shomer in the right order, and still putting my initials in if I am with Shlomo. How would I do it? Shabbos, Shomer v'Zohar v'Dibur Echad. Zohar v'Shomer v'Dibur Echad. Okay? So just put an extra Shabbos with an exclamation point, and, right. So there's a way to fit it in if you want to. So that can't be the answer. So what is the answer? The answer is that the goal, what does God want? Right? What's His main view of the Shabbos? He wants us to be partners. He wants us to create Olam Haba. That's really the goal. Except, in order to do that, you have to know how to fit into the framework where you can do that. Because if you're out of the framework, you're not nobody's partner, you're a rebel. So in order to reach that goal, you have to have the Shomer. You have to have the negative side of Shabbos. You have to have it. You have to know that you're not the boss. You're not the boss, but you're a very important worker. You're a worker who's a partner. but you're not the boss. So before you can get to the goal, you have to have the means to reach that goal. The Torah always speaks about the goal first, and then the means of reaching it. Torah presents the goal. Zachor Shomer Shabbos, that's the goal. Now, you want to know how to reach it? That's Shomer Shomer Shabbos. That's how you reach that goal. Therefore, in the chronology of Shabbos, first comes the Shomer, and then every Shabbos, we go through two of these phases. Friday night is the feminine aspect of Shabbos. That's why Friday night we say V'yanuchu Va. Friday night we call the Shabbos a Kala. Right? Bo'i Kala. Feminine. Because Friday night, predominantly, is the idea of getting the understanding that you're not the boss here. Even though the malachas apply the whole Shabbos, but predominantly Friday night is when you get the message that you're not the boss. The Shomer part of Shabbos. And that's the feminine aspect of Shabbos. The daytime of Shabbos is more for the enjoyment of Shabbos. It says if you have something that you can enjoy at one meal, you save it for the second meal in the daytime rather than at night. Because the Iker only Shabbos is during the day. First the meal during the day. And that's Zohar Shema Shabbos. Zohar is the Zohar, is the male. The male aspect of Shabbos is the daytime. But since they were said, V'bibur Echad, Mincha time, you put them together. And we say Bom, plural. But in any case, but in the chronology of Shabbos, the Shomer aspect, the negative and female aspect of Shabbos come Friday night. And the positive male aspect of Shabbos comes Shabbos daytime. So therefore, in fact, in the order of Shabbos, Shomer precedes Zohar. In the Torah mentions Zohar first, because the Torah first mentions the goal and then the means how to reach it. Torah doesn't speak about the means before the goal, it speaks about the goal before the means. So therefore in the Torah, Zohar comes first and then Shomer. But in the chronology of Shabbos, Shomer v'Zohar, and that's why in the Medrash it says Shomer v'Zohar, following the practical way, the how you have to reach it, Shomer to Zohar. So that is the reason why sometimes Shabbos is referred to in the male, and sometimes it's referred to in the female. Okay. Let's go to another thing over here.
A question on that?
Yeah.
If the first reason is to remind us who's the boss, why is it only to B'nai Israel and not to... only Shabbos is only for goyim, or are not allowed to keep Shabbos?
In that first aspect, it could be that that applies to goyim also. They can't keep the Shabbos as a Shabbos of... there's a Mishnah Brura who brings down that an Eved Kanani, or not an Eved Kanani, but a Goy, an Eved, who's, right, no, is what's it called, the negative aspect of Shabbos that testifies that God created the world that he can keep. Positive after of Shabbos, not. But it's not Chayiv, because the Goyim have, there's a lot of mitzvahs that we do to remind us that God takes care of the world or whatever. They're not required to do that. They're required to believe in God, but they don't have to have all these extra strengthenings to do it. Okay. The way that they understand that God takes care of it is by functioning in the world constantly and doing it properly.
So I understood that. Right. Okay. For
Shabbos completely, yeah. As Shabbos. But what is it talking about? An Eved Kanani?
The famous joke about the guy with the key, right?
Right.
Everyone knows the joke.
Okay. The okay. Did we speak about the Nisiyim and their mistake? I don't remember Parshas Truma if we spoke about it or not, or if we even was here to Parshas Truma. I don't think so. The Nisiyim, what their mistake was. Oh, okay.
Not this year.
Okay, so go over it again a little bit. The Torah says in this week's Sedra, this is what's more relevant to this week's Sedra than if we had spoken about it before, that the Nisiyim brought three of the things, the stones for the ephod and the choshen, the oil for the menorah and for the shemen amishcha, the anointing oil, and the besamim, the different spices for the Shemen HaMishkan and the Ketores HaSamim. Those are the things that they brought. when it mentions on a Siyim Hediyu, it leaves out a Yud from their name. Should have spelled it with two Yuds. That's later on, but now for the building of the Mishkan, that's what they gave. And a Yud is missing from their name. We should have two Yuds, it's only one Yud, Nesiim. So the Medrash says the following, that the Nesiim, when they heard of the mitzvah to give, to contribute to the Mishkan, they said the following: we will wait and see whatever is not brought, and we'll make up the deficit. Whatever it is. And in the end, they brought a lot of very expensive things. These were things that regular people didn't have. So the Nesiim had these very expensive things, and they were a very expensive donation. But they were punished because they didn't give right away. They waited. Right? Now on the surface, what's so terrible? Well, I say if they wouldn't have given anything in the end, it's one thing. They gave a lot. So what was so terrible that they waited and they were willing to make up the deficit? Whatever the Jewish people didn't bring, we'll bring. What's so terrible about that? Right? I would like to have somebody tell me, right, you collect what you can for your yeshiva, and whatever you can't collect, I'll make up the deficit. Anybody wants to do that? I will not take a yud out of your name. I'll probably give you a nice plaque or something. And secondly, where's the mida keneged mida? Why was a yud taken out of their name? What does that mean? So on the surface, I was thinking of a simple answer. If you look in the number of things that were given to the Mishkan, the number of different kinds of things, there's different ways of counting them up, but in one way of counting is there's 13 different things. 13 different things. Okay? And that's significant because the number 13 is echad, one. It shows unity. 13 different things. Also, there are 13 different tribes, counting Levi, so represented the totality of Jewish people. 13 things. If the Nesiim gave three of those things, right? In other words, they gave the stones, the spices, the oil. Even though it had different purposes, but they're considered three commodities. How many didn't they give? 10. So what's missing? A yud. A yud's missing from their name. That showed the 10 things they didn't give. Okay, that's on the surface. I have a much deeper idea. What was the sin of the Nesiim altogether? The mice in the end, they gave very nicely. But the idea is the following. The Tunis Rufus HaRosha once asked Rabbi Akiva the following question. If God loves poor people so much as you claim, how come he doesn't support them? So Rabbi Akiva said, of course God can support the poor people. It's not for the sake of the poor people that he tells us to give tzedakah. It's for our sake. That we should have the merit, right, and save ourselves from Gehenna. That's what Rabbi Akiva told him. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, what's tzedakah? God gives me some extra money, gives this guy, takes away something from him, and tells me to give to him, right, what he gave to me extra. Well, cut out the middleman. Give it to him directly. What are you giving to me to give to him? Give it to him. Obviously, if God wants to take care of poor people, take care of them. What do you need me for? So that can't be for the sake of the poor person, because God can give it directly to the poor person. Why does he give it to the middleman and tell him to give it? Give it to him directly. So it must be for the sake of the rich man. And the Gemara says, we learned that from a pasuk in Rus. When Rus came home, after she collected the things that she was allowed to collect, that the poor are allowed to collect from the field, she came home to Naomi, and she said the following, Ha'ish asher asisi mo hayom, the man that I did for today, his name was Boaz. So Gemara said, what did she do for him? Take his money? Take his crops? He did for her. Said, no. We learn from there, Yosur mimashe ha'osher osim ani. More than the rich man does for the poor man does for the rich man. Because the rich man only gives the poor man money, which God could give him. But the poor person affords the rich person a mitzvah, which even God can't give you. That is when it comes to tzedakah. That's why it says, v'yikhu li truma. Take truma. Because really, when you give, you're really taking. You're benefiting more than you're giving. You're giving money, but you're benefiting mitzvahs. So you're really the taker. It says, v'nosnu, the tameha mikra, and v'nosnu is kadma v'yazla. Goes both ways. You give, but you're also taking. So you're receiving. So that's when it comes to tzedakah. When it comes to supporting Torah, same thing. The Chafetz Chaim says, the pasuk, Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim ba, v'tomcheva me'ushor. The Torah is a tree of life to those that grasp onto it, and those that support it are fortunate. He says like this, he says two ways that a person can support Torah. One way is, he can think that he's doing the Torah a favor, he's doing Torah institutions a favor, he's supporting them. So he's fortunate. He'll get rewarded, fine. But for him it's not a tree of life. Who is it a tree of life? L'machazikim. He said the word l'machazik means to hold on for dear life. If you're drowning and a log floats by and you're holding on to it for dear life, that's called l'machazik, to hold on for dear life. Somebody who understands that when he supports Torah, he's supporting himself. He's holding on for dear life. Supporting the Torah gives him life. For him it's an Eitz Chaim. For him it's a tree of life. Somebody understands that. There's a famous story they tell in Tells, because it has to do with the Telzer dynasty. Blazer Gordon was the founder of Telzer Yeshiva in Lithuania. And when he was a young man, and he got married, he was known, it was clear that he was going to be somebody great. He was a young man, he was 18, 19, 20, whatever he was, but he had the potential for greatness. His father-in-law was a rabbi in Ashishak. His name was Avram Yitzchok Nivazer. He wasn't a rich man himself, but in those days it was customary to, if you have a son-in-law who's sitting and learning Torah, right, that you would support him for the first 5 years, not give him money so he could buy a car and have a nice apartment that's equal to the Reichman's or something like that. That's not what it meant. It meant that they would live in the house with the father-in-law and mother-in-law and eat at their table and not have too much, expenses. Right? That's what it meant. So that was the deal. 5 years he was to live and eat at his father-in-law's table and live with them, not have to pay any rent, and to be able to devote himself totally to learning and develop into the great person that he could develop into. After 5 years already, they had a few little children, and the father-in-law wasn't a rich man, and the son-in-law, Reb Blazer Gordon, got an offer of a rabbanus where he could start, supporting himself. So he told his wife, go to your father and ask for his blessing that we should be able to leave. 5 years are up. I have an offer of a rabbanus, and we have a few little children. It's difficult for them. I'm sure that he'll be happy to hear that we're going. So she told her father, and her father turned white, and he said, no, you can't leave. You have to stay another 5 years. And if it's more money or whatever it is, whatever you want, you have to stay another 5 years. She went back to her husband, she told him. He said, I feel very uncomfortable. Things were very different then. And but if your father is so good to us for 5 years, if it really makes such a difference to him, I will forfeit this opportunity and we'll stay another 5 years. So they stayed another 5 years. At the end of those 5 years, already had a lot of children, older children, expenses were very big, and he got the offer of a very prestigious rabbanus, and he wanted to take the job. She sent his wife again. This time, not only was the father of the wife there, the mother was also there. So she said, look, we have this opportunity and it's difficult for you, so we want your blessing to leave. And the mother-in-law said, she's right. How long can we support them? And the father-in-law said, I don't know who's supporting who, but I'm not going to stand in the way of my son-in-law's career. I give my bracha. And the day they left, the father-in-law died. And then the mother-in-law understood who's supporting who. That's not the normal case, but it shows this idea. You never know who's the one who's being supported, who's the one who's doing the supporting. That the Chafetz Chaim, true to his word, and I'm sure that if I was put in this position, I would fail miserably. And I'm just waiting to be put in the position and to fail, to tell you the truth. Somebody came to the Chafetz Chaim and offered him to support to write off the budget of the Radin Yeshiva. He wanted that schus of supporting the yeshiva alone. The Chofetz Chaim said, I appreciate your offer, I can't accept it. So the guy said, what, what's wrong with my money? Why can't you accept it? This is like, you know, any Rosh Hashiva would be thrilled. Why can't you accept it? He said, I'll tell you why. He said, God could support my yeshiva, right? He could do it very easily. So why doesn't he? Because he wants to give the schus to Klal Yisrael to have a share in my yeshiva. I can't let you take the whole thing. You could have a part of it. I'm sure the part of Yisrael would have done differently. He would have taken the whole thing and started another yeshiva. Start another yeshiva. But in any case, that was the Chofetz Chaim. Okay, I'm sure if somebody comes and offers to me, I tell you right now, I'll take it. That's the basic idea. And that's why it says, well, the people who carried the Aron, who thought that they were the supporters, were really being carried by the Aron. It carried them. Therefore, what the mistake of the Nesiim wasn't that they didn't run in like everybody says and give right away. That wasn't the problem. The problem was their whole attitude was warped. What did they say? We'll make up the deficit. What do you mean you'll make up the deficit? What deficit is there? You think God has a deficit? God says, look, guys, I want to build a Mishkan. I need some gold and silver and copper, whatever. Think you could spare some? What a ridiculous thing is that? God doesn't need it. He could create all the gold and silver he wants. So what does he have to ask us for it? It's obviously not for his sake. Not because he needs the gold for his Mishkan. Because he wants us to have there's no deficit. There's nothing missing. God wants to, he could make the Mishkan ready-made himself. He doesn't have to get people to give anything. It's obviously for the sake of the givers. But if the Nesiim say, we'll make up the deficit, then they don't know what's going on. Their whole attitude is warped. There is no deficit. It's not for the sake of the Mishkan. It's for your sake. If that's the case, that's why the Yud is missing from their name. With a Yud, the word Nesiim means to carry others. Without the Yud, it can be read Nisa'im, the ones who are being carried. You're not necessarily the ones who are carrying anybody, but you have the schus to be carried by what you give. So don't think you're Nesiim, the carriers. You're the ones who are being carried. And I have something else that also fits into this beautifully, and that's the following. If you look in Parshas Truma, where it speaks about the same exact psukim of what was given to the Mishkan, it says like this, Zohav v'chesef u'nechoshes, connecting them all with a vav, gold, silver, copper, u'secheles, v'argoman, v'sola shoni, v'sheish, v'izim, u'ma'oros ma'adamim, v'oros t'choshim, v'atsei shitim. All of them connected with a vav. Then it says, the next pasuk, Shemen Lama'or, without a vav. Shemen Lama'or, oil for the menorah, right? Shemen Lama'or, ule Shemen HaMishcha, Bisamim, what's it called? The Shemen HaMishcha, ule Ktoris HaSamim, the Avnei Shoam, the Avnei Meluim, the Eifel V'Lachoshen. There is no vav connecting Shemen to the thing above. Shemen Lama'or. In this week's Sedra, it repeats the same thing, and there it says Vishemen Lamor, with a vav. Second difference. Those last three things, it says what they were used for. It doesn't say Zohav La'aron V'Lekapores, Kesef La'adonim. It just says Zohav, Kesef Nechoshet. Why by these does it say the purpose? Shemen Lamor, B'Samim L'Shemen Amishcha, right? Avnei Shoav Avnimuim La'efod V'Lachoshet. So I'll tell you a simple reason why, and then I'll tell you the real reason. Simple reason could be that these are different. Zohav is a generic thing. Gold is gold. So whatever gold you want to give, you give gold. Okay? So they get gold. Kesef is generic. The same thing with all the other things. But these things, shemen, there are different kinds and grades of shemen. There's shemen that's fit for the menorah, and shemen that's not fit for the menorah, it's only fit for the menachos. Shemen rishon. The first drop that comes when you squeeze the oil is fit for the menorah. After that, it's not a grade good for the menorah. Menorah grade, or shemen, it's not. So it had to say, shemen, which kind of shemen? Shemen l'ma'or. Shemen that's fit for the menorah, because there's all different kinds of shemen. Same thing with besamim. There's a million kinds of besamim. The besamim that were specific for the shemen amishra and for the ketores. There's a million kinds of precious stones that they have to be for the, not every stone was good for the Choshen and the Eifel, only certain stones. So stones that were fit for the Choshen and the Eifel. So here it had to delineate because there's different grades, different kinds. But the other things, they were one generic thing. That's the simple reason. There's a deeper reason. And that's the following. When the Nesiim gave, they gave these three things. Okay? Their giving was different than the rest of the Jewish people. The rest of the Jewish people gave not for the Mishkan. They didn't give Zohav L'Aron because God can make an Aron. He needs me to give him gold for the Aron. They gave the gold because they wanted this horse. It wasn't for the sake of the Aron they gave it. That was what was used for. They gave it to be able to have a merit. Because they realized what's ridiculous. We're giving God gold to build his Aron. He can build his own Aron. He doesn't need us for that. Only the Nesiim had the warped idea that they're doing it to make up a deficit. That means they're doing it for the sake of the Mishkan. So this was given Shem and Lamor. Unlike the other one was given for the schus of the person who was giving it. We're giving it to make up the deficit. That's why it mentions it. Now when God gave Moshe Rabbeinu the command, it was before anything happened, before there was any sin. God knew the Nesiim were going to sin. Not sin, but not give it properly. But he couldn't tell Moshe Rabbeinu because then it would affect their free choice. So therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam said like this, when I'm giving you the command, I'm separating these things from the other. Because they're different. These are not generic things, those are generic things. So I'm going to separate it, Shem and Lamor, whatever. But when it actually happened, that's when the Nesiim actually did it. Then it became obvious they weren't separated because they were a different class. They were connected with Avav just like the other ones. They were different because the Nesiim gave it with a different intention. That's why they were separated. Not because they were a class of different kind of things. But it's because these were given Shem and Lamaor. It only became obvious when it happened. So in this week's Seder, when it happened, it's mentioned that way. When God told Moshe, he knew it was going to be like that. But he didn't want Moshe to think it was going to happen because people sinned. So he just separated them off as three separate categories because they're not generic things. That's why it mentioned the purpose why they were given for. Okay. Okay, I think that's that will satisfy for this. We'll have a Shir Mitzvah next week, barring any unforeseen things, and then we'll take a break, a nice long break until after Pesach.